you know, the cortisol melatonin cycles are regulated by light and dark. Stress is, you know, related partially to, you know, what your cortisol levels are. So, you know, if you're staring at your screens, you know, post sunset, and, you know, you're watching, you know, violent, you know, TV or movies, you know, or video games before you go to bed, you know, your fight or flight response is going to be jacked before you go to sleep. Your melatonin levels are going to be low and you might fall asleep, but if you fall asleep, you're probably not going to have high quality sleep and you're probably not going to stay asleep. Basically, repair any of the damage that's been going on through the day during the sleep. Eating is stressful to the body. Exercise is stressful to the body. You know, you do want to stress the body so it gets better, but if you don't recover, that stress just builds up and more damage is occurring. And so, you know, we mentioned earlier, you know, your heart and brain are the two locations with the most mitochondria. Your heart, you know, apparently has approximately, you know, 1/3 of it by weight is mitochondria. So, wow. You know, your mitochondria repair themselves during sleep and they use that melatonin, not necessarily as fuel, but I mean, the mitochondria are making melatonin, that's a different story. But if you don't have enough melatonin, the mitochondria don't repair themselves or they don't take out the bad actors overnight. So you end up working on old parts. And if you have old parts, things are gonna wear down sooner, you know, than you expect them to. Humans have evolved for thousands of years without antibiotics, antifungals. You know, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation if our ancestors couldn't figure this out. I mean, there's always been a war with viruses, bacteria, and parasites. You know, program your immune system the way it needs to get programmed. And that's mostly with sunlight. Your, you know, T cells get programmed by the light that's hitting your skin. Let your immune system do what it's meant to do.
A big shout out to today's sponsor, Ergomax. Innovative, scientifically based nutritional supplements for people who care about their health. Use the code MATTHIAS10 at the checkout for your 10% discount. My name is Matthijs and today my guest is Dr. Michael Twyman. Now, Dr. Twyman practices general cardiology but is also specialized in integrative medicine with a focus on getting to the root cause of your conditions. He's an expert in heart attack and stroke prevention, and in 2017, he discovered biohacking and has been using this modality of health optimization to help patients make incremental changes to their lifestyle and their environment to improve their health, their heart health, and overall health over time, including photobiomodulation. So, Dr. Twyman, welcome to Matthijs. How is the weather in the States?
It's cloudy and rainy today. I literally just got back from Mexico last night, you know, 7 days of sunshine and good seafood and beach, but I'll make do. I think my redox is pretty good right now.
Nice. Already some biohacking doors, redox, seafood, and we'll be getting into those topics, of course, today. Like I said beforehand, I'm really looking forward to spread a little bit more knowledge on quantum biology, light water magnetism, because I think it's still very, there are topics that lots of medical professionals in the Netherlands still have to get used to. And if they understand those mechanisms, they are better suitable in helping people help themselves. And I would really like to get into your personal story, how you found out about light, water, magnetism, quantum biology, etc. Some of your maybe some cases of your patients and how you booked success with them. So maybe we can start with who are you? Who is Michael Twyman?
Well, that's a complicated topic, but I'm somebody who really got interested in, you know, getting to the root cause of people's issues a few years ago and really like to help people, you know, live their optimal lives. And, you know, it comes down to optimizing their mitochondrial function. And if you can give people more energy, then they can do what they want to do with that energy.
And what was the exact moment in your life that you saw or that you really found out about those mechanisms? And like you said, problem solving, was there any particular situation on yourself that you wanted to fix really badly?
Fortunately, I've, you know, been in good health. You know, biologically 45, I think I'm, you know, probably a lot younger mitochondrial wise, but no, I've not had any major medical issues, fortunately. And I was, you know, initially thinking I was going to be an interventional cardiologist, you know, fixing people up with heart attacks, putting stents in and such. And, you know, that's work still needed, but I wanted to get to the root cause of, you know, why these people were developing issues in the first place and try to prevent it. So been really focusing on that since 2012. And then in 2017, as you had mentioned in the intro, I, you know, discovered biohacking. is mostly accidental. My wife wanted to go to the country Bhutan to meet the happiest people in the world. And it's about a 14-hour flight from St. Louis, Missouri. So I was like, I'm going to die from the jet lag going there. So did some research on how to not die. And I knew about melatonin from medical school, but didn't really understand the light-dark cycles all that well. But I come upon an article that talked about blue blocking glasses. And these were the particular ones I actually bought. I have some new, more stylish pairs I wear, but I break these out on occasion for a historical fact. But wore these crazy glasses on the plane. And the jet lag was maybe one third as bad as I expected once I got over to Asia. And so then when I got back to the States, you know, fell down the rabbit hole and, you know, read everything I could about, you know, biohacking at that stage. You know, it was mostly Dave Asprey, you know, was kind of the godfather at that point about it. And then eventually met some people who had talked about the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, and then got introduced to his ideas of light water magnetism, and been drinking from that fire hose of knowledge ever since.
Yeah. Beautiful. And a little bit about your story from your youth. Are you an only child? Were your dad or mom in the medical system as well? Or
I have two brothers and a sister, and pretty much all my family is in medicine. You know, they didn't tell me I had to do medicine. I was just exposed to it and found it interesting. And you know, I'm pretty sure I think I've wanted to be a physician since I was in fourth grade. Didn't know what type of, you know, physician, just knew, you know, I was interested in science. And, you know, fortunately through college, you know, I stuck to it and actually had a little bit of a different pathway in that I was a mathematics major. I was also a physics major for a while. I ended up dropping the physics major once I got into medical school and finished out the math degree. And now that I learned a lot more about mitochondria function and quantum mechanics, I kind of dusted off some of that physics knowledge I had from college and kind of figured out, oh, okay, this makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah. And how is your environment and your family and your friends, how did they respond to you finding a little bit more about biohacking and integrating that into your own life?
I mean, I think probably in 2017, they just looked at me like, you know, you're wearing the funny glasses, I don't understand it. And then now pretty much, you know, at least my parents, you know, they have the glasses, they'll usually wear it in the evening time. And you can see on my shoulder, I see you have it as well. You know, I got some red light on. So, you know, teaching the family about photobomb modulation. And so, you know, they'll typically, you know, watch and make sure that I, you know, don't mess myself up something, you know, with it first. And then if it looks like it's working, then they'll play around with it themselves too.
Nice. Well, that's that's a big step. Yeah. So if we can get a little bit into your switch, when you found out about all this, how did this work out for you personally, energy-wise, physical-wise, and how did that translate to your patients?
So, yeah, as I said, you know, I've not fortunately had any major medical conditions. You know, I've been a pretty good sleeper for quite a while. But once I really started kind of quantifying with different trackers, yeah, I could, you know, definitely improve my deep sleep and, you know, quality of sleep. My HRV, heart rate variability, improved. So, you know,
what is your favorite tracker to do that?
I can vary it. I mean, sometimes, you know, right now I'm wearing a Whoop band. And then for sleep, on occasion I'll wear the Oura Ring as well. You know, always in airplane mode, because you know, you got to mitigate the EMFs on your body. At this point, I'm pretty dialed in with my circadian rhythms and light cycles, so I don't really need the trackers to tell me, you know, what's going to break them. But those, you know, my sleep and energy and mental acuity definitely improved once I, you know, really got tight on my light cycles. I mean, you know, anybody's been to my house in the evening time, you know, it always looks like a submarine or, you know, an old school photo studio. You know, it's red lights everywhere at nighttime. You know, still wear the glasses. You know, I got the crazy red ones as well.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And so. So I'm pretty dialed into the circadian rhythms. And so I think right now, yeah, like I said, I'm biologically 45. I don't feel 45. I hopefully don't look 45, but you know, I have a lot more to go, and you know, I have as much energy as I need right now.
All right. Beautiful. And how did you start implementing this into the lives of your patients?
It's basically, you know, the Vince Lombardi, you know, it's lead by example. So since 2017. I pretty much have not taken these glasses off when I'm inside in front of technology or artificial lights. Mm-hmm. And so patients would just ask, you know, what are those glasses? And, you know, to start the conversation there. And then that ultimately leads into, if you want to improve your circadian rhythms, it's, you know, the light that enters your eyes, hits your skin, timing that the nutrients come in, and then, and again, stuff over my shoulder, people ask, what's that red light? And then you say, well, if you're interested in, photobiomodulation, this is the rabbit hole to start reading about that, and have a website where I made some previous videos about benefits of red light therapy and just kind of show people the way.
Mm. And so I guess you explain them verbally and then show them articles, videos, podcasts. What exactly do you do to help them shift from their state of being to the next one?
I typically, if they come see me in the office as a, a patient, go through their story, figure out, what their, haplotype would be if, if they know that info from 23andMe or Ancestry, kind of like a good story from, how healthy was your mom, how healthy was her mom, because you get your mitochondria through that maternal line. Mm-hmm. Those are battery packs, did you inherit good battery packs, or battery packs you're going to be a little bit more concerned about? And then, really start with their light, environment. You can get into all the crazy, other, supplements, meds, biohacks, but if they don't get the circadian rhythms right, rarely is anything else going to go right. So really, take a detailed history on that and then kind of fine tune that and get their sleep better, their stress better. And then many times their heart rate variability and other things are going to improve.
Mm. And what are the non-negotiables that you are giving your patients to live by?
That's a great term. I wish I could say it's non-negotiable. Like, it's non-negotiable if you don't do these things. But I mostly even tell them that, like, if you come to my office and you're not wearing your blue blocking glasses, are you really my patient or not? And during the days of the pandemic, doing a lot more telemedicine and Zoom, consultations, I always had mine on, and if the patients were sitting on the other side, I'm like, where are your glasses? So, there you go. Nice. So that's pretty much the non-negotiables. You got to start with your blue blocking technology first. And then once you got that dialed down, then we'll negotiate some other things. Because everyone wants to talk about nutrition and exercise. And yes, those things are important, but if you don't get your light right, the exercise and nutrition, you're not going to get optimal results then.
Yeah, I wrote down a couple of points. I think it's interesting to pass by with your viewpoints on them, which are the absolute basics of biohacking, to get a little bit more understanding of biohacking, or you could name him one of my the people I really like to listen to is Paul Cech, and he prefers to call it bioharmonizing. to get into a little bit more into what you just said, nutrition, you are what you eat, lectins, for instance, and how this all correlates with light, stress, the sleep-wake cycle, digestion, fungi and parasites. So how does, I know a little bit about light because I got to meet you from Quantum Health TV, and I have some professionals around me that are also using light, water, magnetism, and quantum biology. But why is light the base, the fundamental thing that you should be getting right before you go on to all these next levels in health?
Because it starts with light. I mean, there's the sun, we evolved under it. Without light, there would be no life. All your food that you're eating is grown from the light cycles. The sun grows your plants, you eat the plants, or you eat the animals that ate the plants. Mm. And your body is programmed by that light. You make all your hormones and neurotransmitters based off of the light entering your eyes, going into supercosmic nucleus, and then basically turning on different clock genes in the rest of your body. So your body knows what time of day it is. So you release your hormones and neurotransmitters. So without the correct light signals, things go awry and you don't age as well as you can. Aging is, the slowest way to die, essentially. We don't get out of this alive, but at least we don't think we do. And so how do you, make enough energy that process is as slow as possible. So you have an optimal health span where you're healthy and you get sick at the end and you fall off a cliff. You don't have 10, 20 years of chronic illness. So you have to get the light cycles right first before you start concerning everything about how much exercise am I supposed to be doing? You know, what am I supposed to be eating? Those things are important, but you got to get the light stuff right first.
Mm. And I'm sorry, I took the glasses off already. Otherwise, I'm seeing the glare too much.
Yeah.
Maybe it's nice to give your definition of health before we continue. So we have a clear understanding of what we're talking about when you're saying health.
It's a great question. I mean, health is not just the absence of disease. It's, you know, I like to always bring it back to almost like energy, you know, like, you know, sometimes you ask, you know, what is biohacking? I don't even love that term, but, you know, everybody uses it. I think you know, biohacking is more, you know, how do you optimize your health? And the main way to do that is optimize your mitochondria function. Mitochondria make energy, you know, they make, you know, carbon dioxide you breathe out, they make water, they make ATP. Nitric oxide, you know, there's some other things we talk about. But if you don't mind your mitochondria, you're not going to have the energy that your body needs to repair itself when it gets broken down. So health is having the energy to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
Mm. So it's a state of highly energetic, being.
That's a bigger way to say it.
That's one of my friends, Ruud Elvers, he has, I think, a very beautiful definition of health. Let's see if I can get it, because I think it's worth mentioning. I think it out of my head. Health is a state of highly energetic being, what results in adaptivity as self healing and self expression. I think it's something in that matter. So just in plain English, you make so much energy that you're capable of preserving yourself, that you're capable of healing yourself. And it doesn't matter in what kind of environment you are, you have the energy to adapt. I think that's a beautiful definition.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, all right, light is the absolute basis of life and thereby health. And what is the knowledge, the articles, the books that you should be grasping if you want to understand these topics for a beginner? I think I would say.
Yeah, for the beginner, I mean, you know, I think the way you found me, you know, Quantum Health TV is a good digestible way to learn the basics of light, water, magnetism. I mean, it can get as complicated as you want, but the basics are pretty straightforward. It's, you know, reconnect with nature if you're not already in tune with her. You know, use your technology, but learn how to use it as wisely as possible so it doesn't affect your health in negative ways. And then, you know, find like-minded people that you can learn from. You know, this stuff is not it's not rocket science. You know, it's quantum physics, which is hard in ways at times if you understand how electrons work. But the basics of getting out in the sun, taking your shoes off, connecting with Earth, you know, eating seafood to be able to collect energy from the environment. Those things are easy. So, you know, start potentially with Quantum Health TV. You know, I have, you know, multiple videos on my YouTube channel, my Instagram TV channel, where I talk about these topics. And then, you know, book-wise, Health and Light by Dr. John. It's not a doctor, it's John Ott. It's a book from the 1970s, written at, you know, non-medical level. It's straightforward, explains how light interacts with the human kind of biology. And then the kind of more of the complicated book would be Light Shaping, Light Sculpting Life by Roland Van Wyk. I told people that book is probably the hardest book I've read since I left medical school. It's, you know, very detailed, but if you want to understand how light controls your biology, that's the book. And then, you know, somebody I, you know, consider a mentor, you know, Dr. Jack Cruz, you know, he's, you know, a wealth of knowledge. So, and yep, he's got, you know, tons of free information on his, you know, websites and blogs and stuff. So, and follow Dr. Jack Cruz if you want more information like that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also thinking about Gary Becker's book, The Fourth Phase of Water from Gerald Pollack.
Gerald Pollack. Yeah.
I think, and maybe some documentaries from Jim Alcolini on quantum physics. I think it's the name is Everything is Nothing and Nothing is Everything. Where he goes deep into quantum physics and how you have matter and antimatter, and which could be very confusing in the beginning, but eventually just repeating and getting a grasp of more knowledge will bring you forward in that realm. So, and you were also mentioning DHA, I think, which is a very, 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 very important aspect of health. Like you said, using the energy, the electrons from the environment that you're eating, and also, of course, are gaining through grounding and getting your skin in the game. Can you tell a little bit more about the DHA aspect of health?
So it's kind of like, I consider it like Pokemon, where you got to like collect them all type of thing, where, you know, the more electrons that you can hold on to and then use the photons, the light from the environment to, you know, basically transmit the energy through the electrons that then are used as the fuel through your mitochondria to make energy at the end, the better you tend to do. So you can collect electrons from earthing and grounding. So your bare feet, you know, bare hands on the earth can get those free electrons into your system. So that's why, you know, like I said, I just got back from Mexico yesterday. You know, your appetite is generally way down if you're connected with the earth and you're outside. You don't need as much food to power up the mitochondria. But DHA is one of the components of omega-3, you know, fish oil. And, you know, it is best to get it through natural sources. You know, taking a pill isn't the same thing as getting it through the way Mother Nature intended it. So, you know, the sunlight, you know, hits, you know, the algae, the plankton, you know, they're the ones that are actually making the DHA. The fish eat, you know, the algae and then convert that DHA into a different position. So then when you eat it, then the DHA gets basically absorbed into your system. And you don't use the DHA for energy per se. You're not using it as fuel, but it acts somewhat like the insulation in the wiring. So it helps you transmit that energy from your environment to the rest of your cells. So DHA is, you know, chock full of electrons. You have a lot of DHA in your retina, eye, and in your brain. And you, you know, sitting in front of technology without your blue blacking glasses, it's basically you need to destroy that DHA over time. And you can recycle it in your eye, you can recycle it through your liver, but if you're blue light toxic 8-12 hours a day, you may not be able to recycle it. And you're just going to have to continually replace it by eating seafood. You know, and if you don't have enough, then basically, like, it's not exact, but it's like having a half-charged, you know, phone. Yeah, you know, it works for a while, but it doesn't work for as long as you want it to work.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I have I know a lot of lots of people who say, yeah, but I am taking supplements and I'm supplementing my omega-3s, my fish oil. I have a friend, Thomas van Doorn, explains it like you're putting a cross or a box into a circle, and it just doesn't fit. It doesn't go through the blood-brain barrier because it's not in the SN2 position, if I'm correctly. Could you go a little bit more deeper in that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, I'm definitely not an expert in, you know, the positioning of, you know, the biochemistry of DHA. I mean, there's a lot more skilled, you know, PhDs that can talk about it. But essentially, you're right. You know, when you take something out of Mother Nature, you make it into a blender, put it back in a capsule, and you take it in, it may not go into the right spot. Might work, might not. And the other big issue is, you know, if you take an unknown source of DHA and EPA, blend it up, put it in a bottle, and you have no idea how that bottle's been stored, it's most likely going to be oxidized or rancid. And then you're basically taking something that your body now is going to have to take care of. Otherwise, it's going to cause more inflammation than it would be at lowering inflammation.
So oxidized potentially, situation, there are too many protons?
Correct. There'd be too many protons, not enough electrons. And then, you know, your body has a bigger problem than the potential benefit you get from it. So I'm not saying that I don't ever recommend supplementation, but it's always recommended get it through, you know, the way Mother Nature intended it. And then there are blood tests that you can see to see if you're absorbing the omega-3s effectively. You can look at your omega-3 levels compared to your omega-6 levels, and, you know, gives you an idea if it's working for you.
Right. And is there a difference between intracellular blood testing to the opponent of that? Because the cell, of course, needs to absorb all the DHA.
So most of them, they're measuring on the outside of the red blood cells, and that's kind of a good surrogate. Yeah, you're right. You know, it's mostly the membranes of, you know, your brain, everywhere else. You know, you're not going to do brain biopsies to figure out people's DHA levels. Maybe you need to start doing that. But yeah, measuring your red blood cells is a decent surrogate for what's going on, you know, within the past, you know, 60 to 90 days of your nutrition.
Right. So are there any other ways when you're seeing a patient where you're looking to, in what kind of manner are you looking towards the face, their expressions, their hair, their skin? What are the things that you are looking for and what you are thinking of when you're seeing a face or seeing a posture?
It's a good question. I mean, there's multiple things that have an effect on your skin quality, but you know, if your skin's extremely dry, cracked, you know, brittle hair, you know, maybe it is that you're very low on your omega-3s and you got high omega-6s. You know, it could also be a thyroid issue or you don't have, you know, the right proteins in your diet. You know, there's other issues, but one thing, you know, there's always a fun fact is, you know, you always look at somebody's earlobe. You know, if they got a crease in the earlobe, it's called the Frank sign. It's a marker that they don't necessarily have great collagen. Mm. You know, if they have the Frank sign, there's more risk that they have cardiovascular disease. They may have, you know, plaque building up in the coronary arteries if they have that. You know, if you have the thing, it doesn't mean you have it, but you should, you know, if you, you know, look for it, maybe you should go get some screening if you have it.
Right. It's a beautiful indication. Yeah. For how much are you using Asian medicine into your own practice today?
That really wouldn't be a big focus. I mean, I'm not, you know, like I said, the best term, and I don't love the term, is, you know, I do integrative medicine, integrative cardiology. Is, you know, I'm Western trained, so I now take care of people having heart attacks, but I'd prefer that they never get to that stage. And I think sometimes Eastern medicine does a little bit better job at looking at a more holistic or natural approach to health. And, you know, they're very big into, you know, energy medicine. So taking the best from there, integrating with Western medicine and helping the patient who's sitting right in front of you. So yeah, I definitely have patients that, you know, have Eastern medicine, you know, providers, and I, you know, work with them for that, but I don't personally administer to my office.
Mm. All right. So if we could get a little bit more into food, because the seafood, of course, which we need to use the electrons and use and energize them so we can see, we can use them internally, which is mostly provided by seafood. So the smaller the fish, I think the more closer it is to the algae. So the fish contains more DHA, is less full of toxins. I also learned if the fish is more into a colder environment, the magnetism increases the amount of electrons. Is that correct?
Correct. Colder water has more electrons.
Oh, then it must be that.
Right. And then therefore, most of the time, the real big fish are, you know, in the colder waters.
So what's your favorite fish to or shellfish to eat?
I definitely love oysters, you know, when I can get good ones. I mean, I'm in the Midwest, so, you know, they fly them in, but it's not the same as getting when you're, you know, actually in Mexico or on the coast. You know, definitely love, you know, wild caught salmon, you know, so those are my go-tos, but yeah, I'm pretty much an omnivore when it comes to seafood. So, you know, I'll try almost anything. I mean, the other day in Mexico, I had some octopus tacos. They're outstanding. So,
all right. So how does a day of eating with you look like?
Yeah, I mean,
if you eat.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm not a breatharian or whatever they call those guys. No, I mean, I generally eat two or three meals a day, but I'm pretty close to, you know, eating and, you know, a 10 to 12 hour window most days. It's rare that I would not eat in that type of a window. And typically, what I mean by window is anything that goes in your mouth that isn't water kind of starts your clock for the day. And usually recommend people be done 10 to 12 hours after that point. So usually right now, you know, sunrise in St. Louis is about 5:45 in the morning, but I'm usually eating breakfast, you know, a little before 7, and then usually finishing around, you know, 6 at the latest in the evening. Try to eat as seasonally as I can. But right now it's more kind of a protein berry smoothie, you know, as, you know, coconut oil, almond butter, avocados, chia seeds. So probably got 40 grams of protein in the morning, and I mostly focus on protein and fats in the morning. Mm. Lunch generally is going to be more, you know, something relatively protein forward. And then dinner is usually seafood or, you know, some type of beef or something, and vegetables. So generally, it's pretty boring at times. You know, I'm somewhat of a foodie. I definitely enjoy, you know, different ethnic foods and such, but, you know, I typically just focus on, you know, eating whole, you know, clean foods. You know, I'm not, you know, somebody would say like, I'm, you know, strict paleo or strict keto or strict carnivore. It's, you know, just eat whole foods.
Mm-hmm. And most of them organic, biodynamic, I can imagine?
For the most part, yes.
And what are your thoughts on lectins?
I mean, I've read his book. You know, I think it's more of a kind of a redox before you detox type of story. So, I mean, if you have healthy mitochondria, you probably can get away with that a little bit easier. You know, if somebody is sicker, you know, they need to focus on, you know, rebalancing the circadian rhythms first. Mm-hmm. But some people, you know, there's certain foods that affect you. And, you know, yes, you know, gluten, soy, dairy tend to be the big three. And, you know, typically it's one of those test don't guess type of situations. A good kind of biohack would be to measure your heart rate variability. You know, you can get, you know, different heart rate variability monitors. You know, this is, like I said earlier, the Whoop band. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you could eat foods that contain lectins and what happens to your heart rate and heart rate variability, you know, an hour or two after you eat. You know, if it's, you know, dropping like a rock or your heart rate's shooting way up, you're sensitive to it. You know, I can't tell you they have a true allergy, but maybe that's something you don't include in your diet for a while. So I think it's best to kind of, you know, keep food logs if you're not, you know, feeling like you're at optimal brain performance or energy or sleep, and figure out, is there a food stuff that might be triggering you? But I don't think people can throw out all food classes, like, you know, say lectins are bad for everybody. You know, I'd say focus more on, you know, getting what your body needs. You need those electrons to make energy when you're not fully connected to the earth. And focusing eating on, you know, as clean of foods as you can eat.
But how are you capable of telling that to yourself and feeling and sensing that yourself if you are not calibrated?
That's a good point, is that, you know, sometimes you don't know how good you can feel until you get rid of things. So, yeah, I would say potentially have somewhat of a, you know, short-term, quote, elimination diet where you're eating, you know, very, you know, strict, and then introduce things in. And then when you feel like you're broken, okay, that's what's breaking me. Like, you know, like gluten isn't a major issue for myself. It is for many of my family members. But I noticed, like, if I eat a bunch of gluten, my brain function is like, I'm like an 8 out of 10. Like, I can still, you know, perform at high levels, but I'm not clicking at all gears. So I know I have another gear when I have that in my system. And right. If I choose to do it, okay, that's my choice. But, you know, I now know that, you know, has an effect on me. So that's an example just for myself.
Yeah. All right. So you're also still trying to enjoy food.
Correct.
Beside of the heart regimen of extreme health could have.
Correct. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, perfect by any means. I mean, but I definitely tend to know better that, you know, when I'm doing something, you know, is it in my best long-term interest? Possibly not, but I chose in the moment that's what I want to do. Exactly. And I will suffer the consequences knowing what I'm doing. But it's more an issue when people are unaware that what they're doing is impacting their long-term goals.
Mm. All right. Then I think another topic is stress. How does your practice help with stress? I mean, heart disease, of course, there are a lot of mitochondria in the heart and in the brain. And if we look to science, we see the diseases coupled with those two places in the body, they skyrocket. They have been skyrocketing. How does stress correlated to this picture?
Yeah, it's, you know, stress is probably the reason 80 to 90% of physician offices, you know, visits actually happen. And stress is ubiquitous in, you know, cardiac patients. So stress is natural. It's just how well does your body deal with that stress? And every patient that comes to my office, we do a test called the Max Pulse. It measures 3 minutes of your heart rate variability. It's looking at your sympathetic and parasympathetic tone balance. And, you know, how much are you in that fight or flight sympathetic tone, or the rest and relaxation parasympathetic tone. And patients coming in with palpitations or heart skipping sensations or elevated blood pressure, and I do the Max Pulse test and shows them that they're stressed to the max. I'm like, before I, you know, put you on medications, why don't we work on your stress relieving techniques? You know,
right.
Breathing exercises, meditation, yoga. You know, there's some called, you know, heart math, which can teach people biofeedback. You know, how to get your brain and heart basically talking together again. Mm. So,
how does this test exactly work? Because you're saying the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system.
It's essentially like a pulse oximetry type of probe. It sits on your finger and it's measuring the flow through the small blood vessels in your finger, and then it, does some second derivative calculus on this, how fast certain things are going through those little blood vessels. And so it can measure the sympathetic tone.
You don't need to scare the shit out of them during the test or something like that.
No, they're usually, the nervous people are always going to be like, oh, it's going to show bad things. I'm like, if it's bad because you're stressed sitting in my office, then it's going to be high when you're driving in traffic or when you're at home or something. So, so it's typically a pretty good representation of what's going on with them. I mean, I play around with it myself at times, and, one time I did it, 30 minutes after doing a very, intense hit, Peloton ride, and my HRV was horrendous. And it's like, I just worked out 30 minutes ago, but, so it, there are definitely some, reasons why it might not give you the accurate what your average would be, but as somebody comes in resting and that's their number, why don't you focus on that first?
Right. Are you happen to be familiar with Dr. David Baselli's work on TRE, tension and trauma releasing exercises?
I'm not familiar with that. No.
It's one of the biggest things I've come to discover during my own path. After I saw Wim Hof and I did a long weekend workshop with him, I started really investigating on stress and trauma. And I found out about David Baselli's work, and he worked in lots of war environments, and he even worked with Mother Teresa himself. And he also got shot from time to time. He was getting into shootings, and he saw young children, and kids from 16 to 18, and grown-ups all sitting together in the same room. And the children were shaking and tremoring really, really badly. The pubis, or the, is that the correct word? 16 to 18 year olds were tremoring mediocre, and the grown-ups were not shaking at all. And David then asked the grown-ups after they calmed down a bit, why are you guys not tremoring? Which the response of the parents was, we are scared that if we tremor, we make our children even more scared. So basically, they are teaching their children to repress their stress. And he found out about this mechanism. It's also a work by Dr. Stephen Porges. It's called the polyvagal theory, which is directed to the nervous vagus, nervous vagus, big nerve, from the brain to the intestines, vagal nerve. Thank you, Jesus. And you can activate that nerve by decreasing and letting go of stored energy, trauma and depression, which results in post-traumatic stress disorder, for instance, by activating that system. And he found out about it because of the shootings, and then they started watching animals. And because animals don't have the prefrontal cortex like humans do, which we navigate in social environments, they are their environment. And if they have stress, they immediately start de-stressing themselves if there is a moment. And that's how the nervous system regulates itself. So he has been doing this worldwide, especially on people working in the army and the police force, medics. That we're getting into hostile environments with lots of stress. And it is, I think, one of the most brilliant self-help tools, where you get into a position and eventually you use your iliopsoas, you spread your legs and start tremoring, and you activate the tremor system, which eventually goes up to your pecs, your face, your shoulders, and all the stored trauma and tension will release itself by just small contractions and relaxations. And I've been getting brilliant benefits myself from you just start laughing, or you just start being angry as fuck, or you start crying, and afterwards you have an immense sensation of, oh, damn, I'm so relaxed. And there's lots of beautiful videos of Navy SEALs and other people who've been doing that. So maybe that could be a very nice tool for you and your patients to explore a bit.
Awesome. I'll definitely take a look at it.
So, all right. To get to the next one, the sleep-wake cycle, I think one of the most important one when it comes to light, like you were mentioning before, if the circadian rhythm is not working optimally, what organ is working on what moment of the day, and how is each cell communicating with each other?
Correct. I mean, you know, it's somewhat of a, you know, a balance. You know, the cortisol melatonin cycles are regulated by light and dark, you know, and stress is, you know, related partially to, you know, what your cortisol levels are. So, you know, if you're staring at your screens, you know, post sunset and, you know, you're watching, you know, violent, you know, TV or movies, you know, or video games before you go to bed, you know, your fight or flight response is going to be jacked before you go to sleep. Your melatonin levels are going to be low and you might fall asleep, but if you fall asleep, you're probably not going to have high quality sleep. And you're probably not going to stay asleep. And, you know, you basically repair any of the damage that's been going on through the day during the sleep. Eating is stressful to the body. Exercise is stressful to the body. You know, you do want to stress the body so it gets better. But if you don't recover, that stress just builds up and more damage is occurring. And so, you know, we mentioned earlier, you know, your heart and brain are the two locations with the most mitochondria. Your heart, you know, apparently has approximately, you know, 1/3 of it by weight is mitochondria. So, wow. You know, your mitochondria repair themselves during sleep and they use that melatonin, not necessarily as fuel, but I mean, the mitochondria are making melatonin. That's a different story. But if you don't have enough melatonin, the mitochondria don't repair themselves or they don't take out the bad actors overnight. So you end up working on old parts. And if you have old parts, things are going to wear down sooner, you know, than you expect them to.
Right. And one of the most important things to help that process is getting your skin exposed to sunlight and your eye exposed to sunlight.
Correct. I mean, it's, you know, all your surfaces, you know, your eye, your skin, you know, what comes into your gut and then your lungs or the other kind of the fourth surface, you know, all that information needs to match. So, you know, if you're, you know, that's why I really talked about seasonal eating. You know, if you're eating a bunch of, you know, pineapples and it's, you know, January and there's, you know, 3 foot of snow outside and it's dark at 3 p.m., your body knows it's cold when you're outside, but your stomach thinks it's, you know, it's in Hawaii in the summertime. That's misinformation. Right. So yes, your skin is a solar panel. It needs that information from sunlight.
So are you in the, during the winter time, are you not using the refrigerator? Oh, sorry. Are you not using the heater?
Not too much. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Like in my office, yeah, there's always a disagreement on how cold it is in the office. You know, sometimes the patients, the other people in the room are freezing. I'm like, well, yeah, it's good for your mitochondria. So eventually I've kind of trained myself to tolerate as long as it's not, you know, icicles inside or something like that. But, you know, I'm not hardcore on my own personal CT journey. And I've done enough to, you know,
to know
play around works. With it. Yeah, I know it works, but again, I'm not trying to reverse a chronic disease or anything at the stage, you know. But yeah, definitely cold therapy, you know, helps for many reasons. You know, one, it just makes you more mentally tough to get through what you need to get through in the life. Yeah. You know, if you can go outside without having to bundle up and make yourself only 72 degrees Fahrenheit, usually get through some other hard aspects in your life.
Yeah, exactly. And are there maybe some topics or some examples where you really think now I need to use cold therapy?
I would say the two biggest things, you know, if you have, you know, real trouble with your sleeping, cold therapy will definitely help with that. You know, I won't say it does not suck. It does suck. It is to do a cold shower, you know, half hour before you go to bed. And people think, oh, it's the, you know, it's the rewarming. No, it's actually the cooling cycles. You know, your body needs to get cooler to get in those deep levels of sleep. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, taking a cold shower, you know, half hour before bed, you're likely to have much better deep sleep that night. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of the biohackers use, you know, the chili pad. I have one. I'm not currently using it because it's not that.
Is that like a cold pack?
No, sorry. So the chili pad is a mattress topper. It has silicone tubes in it. And then it, you know, pumps chilled water through the bed.
Wow.
And so, you know, if you have a bed partner, you can have dual zones. So your side can be cold, your side can be hot. But I've definitely jacked it down way too cold before and then ended up on the other side of the bed because it was freezing on that one side. So, so currently not using because it's not that hot where I'm currently at, but probably in the summer, I'll bust it back out. But right. Definitely helps with sleep. And then the other big thing that I know it helps with people is inflammation. You know, frequently joking, I was, you know, where do you keep your meats? You know, you keep them in your refrigerator so that they don't spoil. So, you know, what do you need to do with your personal meat package, essentially, is keep it cold and it keeps things from spoiling. So,
right. All right. And then the topic digestion.
So, you know, we talked about, you know, all your surfaces need to match up. So, you know, you don't want to be putting food into your stomach at, you know, 11 p.m. at night and going to sleep. You know, your gut, you know, has a clock that it's expecting to turn off and get to the recovery phase at night. You know, so your circadian rhythms, I always like using the word zeitgeber. So, you know, the two biggest ones are the light that enters your eyes, hits your skin, mm-hmm. and also time the nutrients come into the gut. You know, your gut is actually... is your outside. It's not actually, you know, internal. And it's what's sensing your environment. So, you know, digestion, you know, should be yoked to your light cycle. So, you know, ideally you're eating your meals outside and you're eating from sun up to sundown. You know, that's kind of the simplest way to think about it. Mm. You know, if people have more, you know, difficulties with their digestion, you know, they might need to do more than that, but that's the basic start is, you know, mm. eat seasonal foods and eat when it's light out.
So I think I've got this question from one of my friends. He asks, let's say if you're taking a banana during the winter time, but you're eating it outside and you store the banana for a while outside, could that be a trick to send new information into the banana, or is it too late because the information is already stored into the banana?
Basically, well, I guess the way I read the question is, you know, depends on, you know, what environment your skin is exposed to at that point that you're eating the banana. If it's a, you know, I don't want to assume that summer is always, you know, a certain month, but you know, if it's summer where you're physically located in the world and it's a high UV light cycle and those bananas are growing that time of year, then you have a match. If you're taking the banana and you're somewhere where your skin is cold and it's dark, that mismatch will cause inflammation in your system. So there's not necessarily more information getting imparted to the banana. It's more that your skin, eyes, all that information is going to get sent to your mitochondria, and your mitochondria is going to decode that information that ultimately comes in from the banana.
Clear. And then one of the latest topics is fungi and parasites.
So I can tell you that's actually like nowhere near my area of expertise. And so it's something that I would say that, you know, I have good colleagues that if somebody had a, you know, chronic mold issue or something like that, I refer them out for that. But again, it goes back to the, you know, redox before you detox. You know, if you get a, you know, high net negative charge in your mitochondria, you can handle almost anything that gets thrown at you. Mm. You know, humans have evolved for thousands of years without antibiotics, antifungals. You know, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation if our ancestors couldn't figure this out. I mean, there's always been a war with viruses, bacteria, and parasites. You know, program your immune system the way it needs to get programmed. And that's mostly with sunlight. Your, you know, T cells get programmed by the light that's hitting your skin. Let your immune system do what it's meant to do.
Right. Yeah. Right. And how are you looking towards? Because the heart is really your field. So lots of people are coming in with heart disease and finding you in that way. How are you finding or understanding the physical, the psychological, the mental side of disease into your practice?
It's a good question because, man, it's kind of twofold. Is that, you know, once somebody's already had an event, there's a lot of anxiety and sometimes depression related to that. You know, am I going to have another event? You know, is my life going to be, you know, shortened because of the disease? And, you know, we meet them where they're at and figure out, you know, how we can deal with their stress at that moment, you know, acute, and then, you know, what mechanisms they can do to kind of rebuild what's gotten broken. But yeah, we talked about earlier, you know, is, you know, heart rate variability is a good metric. You know, if your heart rate variability is, you know, excellent, you're able to handle that stress and your body's able to recover from that. You know, there's studies that, you know, patients who've come into the hospital with heart attacks, those with low HRV, they tend to die more, have worse events long-term. People who have good heart rate variability, they'll be able to bounce back from that. So that's one thing that I'm routinely measuring in patients. But it's one of those things that, you know, heart disease is common and, you know, often people don't find a cardiologist until they're having symptoms. And not saying that's too late, but I want to find people 20 years before they actually had their first symptom, you know, find it at the earliest stages and stabilize it and ideally try to get the reverse.
Right. Yeah. And how is your viewpoint on because I think you need a holistic view. You need to zoom out of working in specialism can be very helpful. But if you are not capable of zooming out, you will always be focusing on that particular point with your focus and your frame of reference. How are you experiencing that with colleagues and other doctors that you know about?
It's a great question. And I would say, actually, I'm a little bit fortunate at this stage of my career is that I elected to kind of reach out and to the community and say, okay, are you interested in me doing, you know, a integrative type of medicine practice, which focuses on mitochondrial energy and heart attack prevention? And the answer is a resounding yes. So approximately 2 years ago, I launched my own practice, Apollo Cardiology in St. Louis, where we focus on that. Mm-hmm. So I no longer round in the hospitals. You know, I can still take care of people who are very sick, but that's not as, you know, something that I want to focus on. I want to look at the very earlier stages. So I, you know, still have colleagues that can take care of, you know, the big issues if need be, but mm-hmm. I'm a little bit fortunate where I'm not, you know, pigeonhole them where like I only have to focus on heart health. I think sometimes that is a challenge, is that, you know, you would be in hospital medicine, you would focus just on your issue. And if there's a side effect, you say, well, this person from this, you know, specialty, they'll come in and fix this problem. You weren't really looking at the whole person. And then once you really look at it as an energy problem to the mitochondria, well, if I can fix the mitochondria in somebody's heart, well, that's going to benefit what's in their brain, their muscles. So it's goes back to being, you know, more of a healer than just a technician focusing on one organ system.
Right. I think that's also one of Western medicine brings beautiful problem solving, but is quite focused on the symptom most of the time instead of the root cause, like you're mentioning. So how do you think the world of Western medicine will progress over the coming years?
That's a great question. And it's going to depend. I mean, it's not going to be the same throughout the world, you know, where I'm, you know, in the States, you know, I don't think it's going to change quickly. I mean, there's always going to be a need for when people, you know, break their leg, trauma, you know, have a heart attack, they're going to need to be acute care facilities that can take care of that. And, you know, Western medicine is excellent at that. You know, where sometimes Western medicine, you know, falls down a little bit is more the chronic diseases, the diabetes, the hypertension, you know, the things that are more lifestyle related. Mm-hmm. That's not stuff that you're necessarily focusing on, you know. And so I think that's where the future ultimately lies, is in the prevention world. That's the reason I model my whole practice around that, is that, you know, yes, it's great to fix people when they're broken, but if you can find them 20 years before that, it's a lot less expensive. You know, you prevent it from happening in the first place. It's also more rewarding. Those people then, you know, have a larger health span. You know, they're doing what they want to do until, you know, 2 weeks before they die. Mm. You know, they're not sick for 10, 20 years, you know, basically, you know, plugging little holes in their system until that point.
Right. Yeah. And I think I can also imagine it gives you a hell of a lot more energy to work with people on preventing disease than reversing disease.
For sure. I mean, you know, I rounded in hospitals for many years, and, you know, I was very good at it, but it also sometimes wasn't satisfying because like the same people kept coming back and back and back. And it's, you know, at that point, you know, you didn't have as much to offer them. I mean, you could keep them alive, but it was, you know, probably impossible getting back to a state of, you know, optimal health at that stage. You know, they're way late into the game. And so, yes, yeah, so it was more rewarding to find the people who, you know, were a little bit broken and put them back on the right path. You know, it's never too late until, you know, you take your last breath. But, and again, as I said earlier, it's like, you know, I want to lead by example. So everything that I learn for my own benefit is I want to teach my patients as soon as I can use that knowledge with them.
Right. I think that's a good quote for Wim Hof.
Yeah.
And are there any topics on your in your daily practice that you're that you wish you would have more knowledge in?
That's a good question. I mean, I personally am a big believer in meditation. Yeah, you know, I kind of found it late in life, relatively late. Yeah, you know, it was only, you know, 3-4 years ago, but it's something I do every day. I wish I would have found that earlier in my career and would have been able to benefit from it and then teach my patients about it. I think, you know, the light water magnetism thing is still fascinating. I mean, there's something that I'll never consider myself a, you know, true expert in. It's something I'm, you know, a couple chapters ahead of most people. And that's something that I really want to focus on going forward.
Mm, right. All right. And how are you studying right now? Is your favorite way of studying? Is it finding as many podcasts as you can, audiobooks, articles, meeting with other doctors and other specialists? How does it work for you?
I would say probably generally it's podcasts and YouTube videos is probably the best way. I don't know how I developed it, but yeah, I think you earlier asked that, like, it was one of my superpowers. I think it's that I can listen to high-speed audio podcasts and videos and still retain most of the information.
High speed.
Yeah, I mean, at least 2x. If it's not 2x, I don't want to listen to it.
All right.
And I think that's also probably one of my, you know, downfalls is then I end up starting talking too fast to patients and they're like, you need to slow down. Like, you might have to listen to me at 1/2x to put me back at regular speed then.
I know from Asian medicine, when somebody speaks really rapidly, there could be something wrong with the heart.
So I checked mine out. I know it's not my heart. I think it's just, I'm listening to things too fast sometimes.
All right. It's your new normal.
Right.
Was quite fast. All right. Well, to get into the latest questions, like I mentioned before, to get a little bit more personal, you already mentioned your superpower, listening to podcasts and videos 2x. The question goes as following. If I were able to ask 5 of your best friends and we asked them what Dr. Twyman's superpowers, which they are unanimously agreeing upon, what would that superpower exactly be?
I think one of my superpowers would be the ability to distill complex topics into information that patients can understand. You know, quantum physics is complicated. Listening to Dr. Cruz at times can be very complicated. But, you know, and, you know, I can tell you, like, for, you know, a year, I didn't understand 90% of the words that came out of his mouth, and I had a physics background. But then once it clicked, and I can digest it into information like, okay, these are the things you have to do. Now, if you understand the science, I'll start explaining it and working way back up to the highest level. So I think I'm pretty good at distilling the complex information into what you do about that.
Right. All right. I also really like this one. If I were able to hand you over a magic phone and you were able to ring your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give that 20-year-old Michael?
Yeah, I've thought about this one before. As I would have, you know, loved to have found circadian biology when I was in my 20s. You know, I started medical school when I was 22 years old, and that was like my lost decade, you know, living inside under blue light and studying nonstop. My health was the worst it's ever been. I didn't realize I, you know, was, you know, in bad shape at that point. But if I knew circadian biology, blue light blocking technology, my brain would have worked so much better during those years of training.
Mm. It's quite ironically, you're living inside, very unhealthy, studying health, so you can explain other people what health is.
Correct.
So, your own school would be outside, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, I would. Yeah, if I could have a school that would have been outside, I would have done a whole lot better, probably.
Well, you made it so far, and you're not, and you're still breathing, Michael. So,
yes.
And what if we would say, if you could give all the 20-year-olds, people around the world some advice?
I'd say focus on your sleep. It doesn't sound like that sexy idea, but like if you sleep well, you will be able to do whatever you want to do in life, probably. You know, if you want to be an excellent athlete, you have to sleep and recover. You want your brain to work well so you can be, you know, high-powered scientist or, you know, financial person. You need your brain working at peak performance. It has to come down to sleeping optimally. And, you know, how do you do that? You know, see the sunrise, block blue light, you know, don't eat too late in the night. They're simple topics to, you know, to address. But if you focus on getting high-quality sleep, that's where I would look into.
All right. All right. Oh yeah. This one, the best and the worst, or maybe the worst and the best day of your life.
Those are hard questions. I don't know if I've had either yet. I mean, that's a good point. Like I'm an optimist that like the best things are still to come. I mean, I've spent 45 years building, you know, myself up, and I think, you know, things are, I don't hope to ever peak. Worst days, I'm sure it's, you know, a family member passing away would probably be one of the worst days of my life. But I, you know, recently got into reading more Stoic philosophy, and it's, you know, control what you can control. Like I can't control when bad things happen in the world. I can only control my responses to it. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I know bad things are going to happen. You know, what can I do to make myself more resilient for that? I know good things will happen, but they don't last forever. You know, bad things are coming again. So, you know, how do you kind of live in the moment and just keep going along the way, helping other people?
Right. So how is the next coming 5 years for you looking, you think?
it's exciting. I launched this practice 2 years ago, and it's starting to pick up steam where more patients are getting interested in this type of medicine, where I'm not waiting for you to get broken. I'm finding you earlier, saying I'm going to work on your stress management, I'm going to help you sleep better. Of course, we'll talk about exercise and nutrition, but those things aren't the absolute most important things. You need to focus on your light and your sleep first. And then ultimately, now that the world's going to start hopefully opening up travel more, is I want to be able to do more health retreats with patients or wellness vacations and show them this way. Yes, I can be on podcast and do videos and explain it, but I think it's more beneficial to take somebody out of their environment and say, this is why you're outside on the beach this morning looking at the sunrise. This is why you're eating seafood for breakfast. This is why we're going to go to bed at 9:30 instead of midnight on this trip. So showing people the way versus telling them the way.
Exactly. So like the ideal wellness vacation would be you doing what you really like to do to become a healthy man. And while you're doing it, exactly explaining why it works.
Correct.
And what would be the destination?
Probably back to Mexico would probably be one. I was down in Cabo yesterday, but I've been to Cancun 4 times in the past 18 months. It'll probably be one of those 2 locations.
Right.
Light water magnetism, that's where it starts.
Right. So, I think we covered lots of the topics, and I think it's very valuable that you are one of the people, one of the doctors, because of course you have a diploma which also creates authority. And in the Western world, we tend to listen to people with diplomas instead of people who do not have. So all the time you spend inside studying medicine, they of course they also give benefits for people digest or maybe listening a little bit more easy to you than to somebody who doesn't have a diploma. So I would say keep rocking, and if there is anything maybe on the stress topic, the theory stuff, I will definitely send you something about it. Otherwise, I would just say keep rocking, keep helping people, and keep preventing disease. And I think the last question is, how do people find you and the work you do, Michael?
Well, again, thank you for the opportunity for talking with your audience today. It's a pleasure to talk with a like-minded person who understands light water magnetism. It's always start at the basics and optimize your energy to do the things that you want to do. But if people are interested in following me, I'm on Instagram. It's Dr. Twyman, Twyman. That's how you spell my last name. Same website, drtwyman.com, and my practice is apollocardiology.com.
All right. Well, thank you guys for watching and listening. If there's any question, feel free to drop them in the comments, and see you next time.